Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Electric Leftovers. My name is Jason. This is episode 420. We've updated just a little bit. And I gotta apologize for the video watchers behind me. You may notice it's a very bright light, like right there. It's almost sunny today, and there's still a ton of snow outside, and I've done what I can to cover it for now. We'll deal with it as we go. I would love to find a way to export OBS settings and then just move this, but it's neither here nor there. Anyway, welcome to the show. This week, we've got new Final Fantasy Tactics. We've got new Return of the Obra Dinn. We're going to talk about Galaga. We're going to talk about Genesis Noir. And I didn't pull up the movie and the music thing. Let me do that real quick, like, because I was not prepared. Let's see. Oh, we're going to look at Poor, Poor, Pitiful Me and North by Northwest. Should be a pretty good time for everyone involved. Did have some, I don't know what quite to call it, editing issues with last week's show. I'm having to learn to use my editing software the way it was intended, as opposed to the way I want to use it. So we'll trip through this a little bit. I think we're okay. I think I've kind of got a better handle on it now. I guess we'll see. You'll have to let me know when the show is over. Speaking of the show being over, let's move on.
Serpent. Reveal yourself. Show me your patterns, your unified theory, your push-pull, swing-drag, tick-tock, flux, gravitational. I'll let hot groove swims through the black and white hip-time, free-space, broken time continuum. The Big Bang is a beat, is a gunshot, is a birth. Mother! Striving for beauty and completeness between the knots and spirals and the beats as it counts us off for one, a two, a three, a four.
One, a two, a three, a four.
An ever insolent you, the musician, respond that call from the belly of the universe. A one, a one, a two, a three, a five, eight, 13. We struck gold. AU,
AU,
father of creation. Every perfect gift is from above and spiraleth down from the father of the extreme and the mean, the divine. Cool yourself. Temper the backbeat. Distribute your rhyme, syncopation, time dilation. Let her voice soothe you. Elements bang heavy on the eardrums. In truth, you flatten that chord spring. Charm quarks become protons in her mouth. In her throat, she hums hadrons. The player's brows.
A noir adventure spanning time and space. You play as No Man, a watch peddler caught in a love triangle with other cosmic beings, Miss Mass and Golden Boy. When your affair turns into a bitter confrontation, you will witness a gunshot fired by a jealous god, otherwise known as the Big Bang. Jump into the expanding universe and search for a way to prevent or destroy creation and save your love. Dial a rotary phone, destroy a civilization, plant a garden, improvise with a musician, create a life experiment with objects to progress your journey. Explore moments throughout the lifespan of the universe and search for a way to change the course of destiny. Observe moments in the history of the universe from the first microseconds of life to trillions of years in the future. This is Genesis Noir, a point-and-click adventure developed by Feral Cat Den, published by Fellow Traveler in 2021. This is a game we played for the stream. We were doing that whole kind of noir thing for a little while. And I really like this game. I like the music, I like the art, I like the story, I like the gameplay. I like pretty much everything this game had to offer. I think it was excellent. It's not very long, 6-7-ish hours, maybe. Not very hard, but it's not supposed to be hard. It's supposed to tell a story. There are some moments in it where it was a little confusing as to exactly what the hell we were supposed to be doing, but I think we figured it out eventually. I think we figured it out. Totally recommend. Totally recommend. If you watched games like Night Call and Chicken Police and that, and you thought those were pretty good, give this one a check out too. So for our reviews this week, let's see, pulled up here, any of our usual contributors. I think we've read one from 16 Bitter before, but he did a full review, so we're not going to do that. Oh, yeah, we got one. I'll be damned. We'll do these three. Starting with Horror Spooky. In 2015, they say, another arcade classic on the NES. The Nintendo Entertainment System has seen its fair share of arcade classics. Perhaps one of the most memorable, however, is Galaga, a port of the arcade game with the added and unnecessary subtitle, Demons of Death. Despite the added subtitle, Galaga on the NES is the same as anyone in the arcades will remember. Galaga is such a well-known video game that it feels almost silly to explain its mechanics, but I will, nevertheless. The gist of Galaga is that the players control a spaceship and must fight off a variety of different aliens. The aliens come in different flavors with different attacks and movement patterns. Players can only shoot up, so the game challenges players to avoid coming into contact with the aliens, as well as destroy them with laser blasts. Each level has its own strategy and trick to really succeed at. There's also a bonus stage that tasks players with destroying as many of the attacking aliens as possible before they are able to escape beyond the player's spaceship. Special alien enemies, considered bosses, are able to abduct the player's ship and convert it to their own side, which adds another interesting wrinkle to the gameplay. That's really all there is to Galaga, though, which is its biggest flaw. The game is a little too simplistic for its own good. Instead of doing what is more or less a straight port, the developers should have considered adding additional content, as the NES could have certainly handled it. this really simple style gameplay is better suited for the arcades and the quarter-feeding mentality, as opposed to a game that one wants to sit at home and play on a console. The graphics and sound design are both simplistic as well. Yes, this is on the NES, but the NES was actually capable of a lot more than most give it credit for, as many other games on the system illustrate. The NES was capable of some pretty impressive visuals and scope, and Galaga definitely doesn't take full advantage of the hardware's capabilities. Even so, the graphics are serviceable for what it is, and there is no denying how iconic the alien designs and general aesthetic of Galaga has become over the years. The game is one of the most instantly recognizable video games on the planet, to be perfectly honest. Galaga's simplistic gameplay may seem a little disappointing when played on a home console as opposed to in the arcades, but there's no denying its place in gaming history. The core gameplay mechanics are solid, and the game controls fine on the NES despite the somewhat uncomfortable controller design. Overall, it's a game that I think every serious gamer should play at least once. But if one has a choice between the NES or the arcade version, they should definitely play it in an arcade if at all possible. Horror Spooky gave it an 8. I got nothing to say about that. That was a great review, Horror Spooky. I think you proofread. S. Greenwell, in 2001, however, says, "Wee." And they go on. Galaga is a classic arcade game that was converted over to the Nintendo Entertainment System sometime in the 1800s. In it, you play the role of a lone space fighter against evil space aliens. I wonder if they meant 1980s. I don't know. Now, most people know the story behind Galaga, but let's go over it once more just to make sure. It starts, as most stories of intergalactic conquest do, with a towel. Towels are an outstanding thing. They can dry you off, keep you warm, soak up sweat, hail down incoming cars. They are simply so versatile. Anyway, there was one towel, and it was the grandest and bestest towel in the universe. The evil space aliens wanted to get a hold of it because it was the key to the ultimate weapon. However, the lone starfighter pilot, his name was Cedric, got to the towel first. It's his job now to beat all the aliens with his brown blobs of power and save the universe. Classic literature at its best. In Galaga, the evil space aliens come in wave after wave, attacking you mostly with spears and really sharp toothpicks. One will instantly destroy your ship. I can only assume that your ship is made out of cardboard, or that the toothpicks are really, really pointy. You can counterattack, not with toothpicks, but with little brown blobs that closely resemble burnt tuna noodle casserole. My explanation makes the game sound quite simple to play, and this is true. However, it's very tough to master. After the first couple of stages, enemies begin to come in faster and more furious than the Clinton family at Hooters. It's 2001 humor, ladies and gentlemen. Projectiles whirl all over the screen, and only a master will be able to keep up. On to the graphics. Most people don't know this, but the reason why most early Nintendo games looked like beef soup splattered on a graffitied subway wall is that the space aliens from Galaga stole all the world's colors except for 6. However, when somebody finally got up to wave 200 of the game, this unlocked the secret key that released all the graphics back out into the world. Unfortunately, the games already released still looked like a frog in a blender on the puree setting. Staring at a blank white piece of paper is more astonishing and mind-opening than these graphics. They're most blobs of color, they are most blobs of color that look strangely like programming code. Well, except for the picture of the naked lady on stage 6781. Once upon a time, there was some really, really cool music for this game. Like, outstandingly cool music. So good that it made people cry and gave up their jobs to become ministers in the great Galagian church. However, the world's nations saw a problem with this and banned the music from the game. Except for the nation, of you Blockestein, and we see how well they have done. All that remains of it are minor themes before and after each level, and some rather weak sound effects. Galaga is simply an outstanding game that you should buy immediately. First, check underneath your couch cushions. There might be a copy there, or there's probably enough loose change there to go out and buy a copy. If not, any major used game store should have a copy for under $7 million. Any price under $7 million is well worth it to play this fabu game. S. Greenwell gave it a 10. A little ridiculous, but not a terrible review. finally, Linky Winky. Saved the best for last, I did. In 2006, says, pure and simple, Galaga is a gaming classic. Galaga is an extremely primitive game when compared to games of today, 2006, remember, and even when compared with other NES games. The allure of Galaga is that it is a primitive and simplistic game. Sometimes you just need a break from playing games where you have to collect items or remember all the different branching paths. When you want a game where the object is to kill every enemy and score as many points as possible without worrying about upgrades or bosses, you come to games like Galaga. Galaga is the epitome of classic arcade gaming, and Namco did a wonderful job of bringing this game to the NES. The most important aspect of an arcade game is the gameplay and controls. Even though this is the NES, the game is a direct port of the arcade game, and the gameplay is just as good as in the arcades. The A and B buttons both fire your gun, and only the left and right direction keys are used on the control pad, and they move your ship, left and right respectively. The responsiveness of the controls are excellent, and you will never lose because of a problem with the controls. The regular stages in the game consist of enemy ships flying onto the screen in formation and then setting on the top of the screen in rows, where the ships will start to dive bomb and shoot you. Occasionally, you'll come upon a bonus stage where ships quickly enter and exit the screen in formation, and you have to shoot as many as you can. The more you hit, the more points you get added to your score. You can also perform a trick by letting a ship capture your ship, and then you recapture it, and you'll have two ships, which means double the firepower. Is the word two, not the number two, T-O? I think they meant the number two. That is what the whole game consists of. It is very simple and there is little variation, but it is extremely addictive and the levels get harder over time. This game is one of the first NES games released and the graphics prove it. You will not be amazed by the graphics, even by NES standards. The game has three different enemies, a black background with colored dots moving down screen to represent stars and motion, and the green enemy ships will emit a beam. You also have a bullet of your own. That is the extent of the graphics. Well, there's the, what there is, though, is done well. The stars move fluidly, and the animations of the ships are very nice. The graphics do the job of representing the game on the screen, but that's all it really does. Galaga is unique, like most early arcade games, in that story and sound are virtually non-existent and are really a non-factor in the game. Because of that, I'll review those two categories together. The story of Galaga is extremely simple. You are the pilot of a spacecraft and your planet is under attack, so you are charged with going into space and destroying all of the alien ships. Like the story, the sound and sound effects in Galaga are very simple. There's a brief tune that plays when you start the first level and when you start a bonus stage. And you hear bleeps when you fire the weapon and variations of a crashing sound when you hit an enemy ship. You also hear a pitched noise when ships start to dive bomb you. A random sound effect also plays constantly and may be the sound of other ships moving left and right. Galaga is a classic game without a doubt, and this port is excellent. You will find that you will come back to this game over and over again when you are bored of the more complex games and just want to destroy tons of ships. I highly recommend that you buy this game on any platform. It says Linky Winky, who gave it a 7. You know, nobody's really wrong, I guess. It's just good old solid Galaga. What are you gonna do? The NES version looks and plays like the arcade version. And if you like the arcade version, I think you like the NES version. I don't know what more you want from me. I think everything is fine. Everything's a 7. I would give this game a 7 across the board. Maybe not for music, but there is no real music. But the music that is there is good enough to do the job that it's there to do. It doesn't excel at anything, but neither is it bad at anything. So I'll just call it a good, solid little space shooter. Last week we watched Harvey. I hope you did, as well as I did. And I hope you enjoyed it as well as I did. I think it's a fine movie. One of Jimmy Stewart's best. Probably. He's got a lot of really good ones. I think it's one of his lesser appreciated movies. Can we say it like that? I think we can. This week, we're going to shift from Jimmy Stewart, who appeared in a couple of Hitchcock movies, to a Hitchcock movie that doesn't have Jimmy Stewart in it. We're going to look at North by Northwest. This one's got Cary Grant. You might remember it's him running and then the plane. That's the big scene. Excellent movie. One of Hitchcock's better films. Bigger films, I guess. No crows that I can recall. Just a very good movie. Nothing bad to say about it one way or the other. Check it out. Now that we've had some coffee, let's read some news. Our lead story, The Passing Parade. South Korean model Ein, I guess, also known as Angel Box Girl, is being prosecuted for obscene exposure following incidents from last fall, Oddity Central reported. In Seoul and Gangnam, Ein walked through the streets wearing a large cardboard box with holes for her arms and legs, plus two more, which she invited strangers to put their hands in to grope her breasts and other body parts. Naturally, she attracted large crowds, and police were called to disperse. "It's freedom of expression," she said. "I just wanted to market myself. I actually saw many positive reactions, with people telling me they support me and applaud my courage." If found guilty, Ein could face a $3,800 fine or up to a year in jail. I can't imagine many people are going to get a chance to experience that and be like, "Yeah, 6 out of 10, you know, what do I know though? Story of, okay, pet owners who are exceedingly attached to their little furry friends sometimes go to the trouble of having them preserved through taxidermy after they die. After her, Roborowski dwarf hamster Hammy passed away last year, Jess Porter Langson, 27, who lives in Brighton in the UK, sought out B. Ostrowska, a local taxidermist, hoping to immortalize her beloved pet as a pole-dancing stripper, Metro News reported. This hamster was so iconic, and all my friends knew Hammy and wanted to see him, Porter Langson said. He needed something special. Ostrowska posed Hammy on a small platform with a pole and sold a little thong for him to wear. Sewed a little thong, which is stuffed with tiny dollar bills. He's got this creepy little smile going on, Porter Langson said. I was blown away. What is more iconic than a hamster on a stripper pole, hustling for money? What indeed, News of the Weird says. I can think of several things, probably. How iconic hamster. Okay. I don't think you know what that word means. Fun suckers, ladies and gentlemen. The United States Federal Highway Administration, in an effort to suck any remaining fun from highway commutes, has laid down the law. By 2026, states must ban messages on electronic highway signs that include references to pop culture or evoke a laugh. Examples: visiting in-laws, slow down, get there late from Utah, use Yablanka from Massachusetts, and Hocus Pocus, drive with focus from New Jersey. The AP reported that the agency wants the signs to be simple, direct, brief, legible, and clear, because clever messages might distract or confuse drivers. One Arizona state representative, David Cook of Globe, was underwhelmed. Prime example that the federal government is not focusing on what they need to be. I'd like to know what David Cook believes the Federal Highway Administration needs to be focusing on. Because I would believe that highway safety is... It's stupid, right? It is pretty dumb to make that a whole thing. But... it's the Highway Administration. They need to administer the highways. Be careful what you wish for, ladies and gentlemen. The Lexington, Kentucky Convention and Visitors Bureau appears to be desperate for tourists, the AP reported. It is using an infrared laser to send messages towards potentially habitable planets in a solar system 40 light years away, luring extraterrestrials with lush green countryside and famous bluegrass. That was in a quote. Lexington native Robert Lauder, an expert in astrobiology and SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, conceived the idea, and linguistics expert Dr. Andrew Bird consulted, quote, "We included the molecular structure for water, bourbon, and even dopamine because Lexington is fun," he said. I guess we'll find out in 2064 if it worked. Here's a bright idea. Jessica Beatty, 42, of Clearwater, Florida, thought she might throw off the court by submitting someone else's urine for a mandated drug test, the Smoking Gun reported. She didn't choose just any old random donor, though. She allegedly collected urine from her aunt's dog. Beatty was arrested on December 28th for possession of drug paraphernalia and driving with a suspended license, and she had priors for cocaine possession and other offenses. When she was confronted on January 11th for her fraudulent urine sample, she admitted it wasn't her pee. Her bond is likely to be revoked, sending her back to jail. It's very difficult to fake a urine test. One of the jobs I had several years ago was testing urine. It was a fun job. Sure it was. And the training you get on that, it's very difficult. Not saying can't be done. I'm saying it's very difficult. Government in action, ladies and gentlemen. In Oklahoma, a proposed new bill, HB 3084, would prohibit students who, quote, purport to be an imaginary animal or species, i.e. furries, from participating in the school's curriculum or other activities, KOKH-TV reported. Representative Justin Humphrey of Lane, Oklahoma, filed a bill on January 17th, and it would also require parents to pick up their furry offspring from school or risk them being turned over to animal control. Excuse me. Leave the cat ears at home, kids. Justin probably got beat up by a furry. You might guess. Are you going to prohibit? You can't come to school because in your spare time, you VTube as a panda? That's the dumbest thing. Yeah, where's what's his name? Where's what's his name? David Cook. No comment. No comment on that. You're very upset about the road signs, but not this. Isn't this government not doing what it's supposed to be? Anyway, you're going to need your dictionary for this one, ladies and gentlemen. In York, England, signs have been popping up that appear to encourage citizens to exercise obtundity. Obtundity, the BBC reported on January 17th. Of course, no one knows what that word means. Quote, knowing the police, it could be anything, said one resident. Social media has come alive with speculation about the signs, but it turns out that Exercise Obtundity is the name of a training program involving the York City Council, Newark, Yorkshire Fire and Rescue Service, and the Yorkshire Ambulance Service. The signs are merely warnings of streets that might be closed during the activities. Then it says stand down. So it's not telling you, go out and exercise some obtundity. It's telling you that we are exercising obtundity, and you need to be aware of this. It's the right word, but sometimes the right word is the wrong way to say something. Okay. Our least competent criminal this week, a man in Sulphur Springs, Texas, that sounds like a wonderful place, was arrested on January 9th for stealing a Lamborghini in Houston, KLTV reported. Everett Van Jennings, 34, parked the sports car in his own garage, police reported, along with two other vehicles that he had nicked. Police said together they were valued at $500,000. The Lamborghini's owner tracked the car using a GPS device and set off the lights and alarms, but Jennings claimed to be out of town and unable to return home. Law enforcement got a search warrant and along with the car's found materials used in VIN swapping. Jennings was charged with at least two felonies. We don't know how many, but it was at least two. If only someone could check. Don't try this at home, ladies and gentlemen. Everyone knows that opening a bag of potato chips can be as challenging as breaking into a bank vault, especially if you're hungry. I've never been that hungry that's been a problem. But on January 3rd, a 75-year-old man in Dalton, Georgia, used an unorthodox and dangerous method that landed him in the hospital, the Charlotte Observer reported. The man tried to use a lighter to get his chips open, resulting in third-degree burns to about 75% of his body and the recliner he was sitting in. Holy crap. Chips, with their high concentration of fat and carbohydrates, are highly flammable. And then it... try scissors. Okay. It's contents under pressure, kind of, sort of. Probably just exploded. News that sounds like a joke. With freezing weather causing slippery surfaces, NHS Scotland, the country's health service, is advising people on how to safely move about the streets, STV News reported. Experts suggest that folks walk like a penguin, with toes pointed out slightly, knees loose, and arms extended out from the sides. Walkers should take short steps and keep their center of gravity over their feet. While it may seem silly to walk or waddle like a penguin, if you're Benedict Cumberbatch, the alternative may be a nasty injury or even time in the hospital, said Dr. Amelia Crichton, Director of Public Health at NHSGGC. Quote, penguins know best. You ever see a penguin in a situation? No. There's probably some truth to that. Positively Hitchcockian. Our last story of the week. In southwest London, patrons outside a Greg's bakery are being warned of attacks by hungry, hungry crows. The Sun reported on January 16th. Paris Sine, 23, who works nearby, said, it's happening every day. They all swoop down in a frenzy. Jay Baez, 27, a barber, said, on Thursday, a woman was eating a bacon sandwich. The crow tried to rip it out and nearly scratched her head. Locals are hoping the city council will call in a falconer to scare the crows away. Not by using the falcon, just by being out there and yelling like, hey, you birds! Get. And a little stick. Get. Gone, get. Gone, get. It's cocky. Weekly Warren is from the Warren Zevon self-titled album, and today we are going to look at Poor, Poor, Pitiful Me. Was made a hit twice. Linda Ronstadt recovered it, and almost two decades later, Terry Clark, whose version topped the Canadian country charts, reached the country top five in the U.S. In keeping with Warren's sardonic lyrical style, this says, the song's verses deal with a suicide attempt, domestic abuse, and a brush with sadomasochism. It's reputed to be a friendly swipe at Jackson Browne, Brown's songwriting would be a little depressing. I really like the song. I think it's a fun little song. If you know, suicide, domestic abuse, and sadomasochism, you know, you gotta take everything in stride a little bit. Called a country rock song? Yeah, I guess. It's a good one. Give it a listen. Ladies and gentlemen, that is it for this week's episode of the show. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm trying something a little different again with the visual show. So, if you're not watching, if you're just listening, what you're missing in the visual now is over on the side where I used to have like what we're currently talking about. I'm actually going to show some clips. I'm gonna go grab a video for our reviews and the archives, and I'm going to play them over off to the side over that way. Just trying to make it a little more visually interesting, you know, because there's not a lot to see. I understand this is an audio medium. I'm just trying to spice it up a little bit, I guess. Next week, we'll be back with another show. We'll talk about some more music. We'll talk about another movie. Pardon me. And we'll have some new Final Fantasy Tactics, we'll have some new Return of the Obra Dinn, and who knows what else. There may be so many things that we may never know. We'll probably have it figured out by then, though. I'm gonna get out of here. Thank y'all. Appreciate it. We will see you later.